in terms of just not only shopping natural foods, but shopping at an independently owned natural food store, you are having, your money is having a greater positive impact on your local community than if you take that money and spend it at a big corporation.
Welcome to Common Roots, an infra podcast.
And I'm your host, Haley Craig.
Independent natural food retailers are as diverse and unique as the communities they serve. From urban to rural, East Coast to West Coast, small to large, there's one thing that these stores have in common, a deep commitment to providing healthy foods to their communities. In celebration of Infra's 20th anniversary, we're handing over the mic to 20 Infra members to share their challenges and triumphs in navigating the world of natural food retail. Are our common roots really so common? Let's find out. Today, we are joined by Emily Cantor from Cambridge Naturals, and this is their story. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Emily. Would you just like to start by introducing yourself and telling us all a little bit about your store?
Sure. So nice to be here. My name is Emily Cantor, and I'm the second generation co-owner of Cambridge Naturals. We've been around since 1974. My parents started the business. They were 23 years old, so just babies, just out of college. And we've been going strong ever since. We started as a full-line grocery store, and then over the years, we transitioned to be more of a holistic health and wellness one-stop shop. So we do actually carry quite a lot of groceries still, but it's a more streamlined, curated selection, a lot of gourmet, and then a lot of really wonderful holistic wellness products.
I love it. And would you just like to talk a little bit about the neighborhood and the area that you're in and kind of the demographic, what that space looks like?
Yeah, so we're in a fairly urban area. We're in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which is a pretty densely populated city, also surrounded by some other cities like Somerville and Boston. And so we pull from a pretty wide range, and our store is located in a very high foot traffic area, as well as we have a pretty big parking lot right in front of our store. We're very close to public transit, and so we get customers coming from all over, coming on their commutes or commuting to us specifically, which is wonderful. And we're also in an area surrounded by a lot of other symbiotic local businesses, which is, again, really wonderful. We're right next to a locally owned and independent cafe. Just down the street from us, there's a locally owned independent bookstore. And so the area we're in is also a destination for people who value highly shopping locally and independent.
Yeah, I love that. And just to clarify, too, you only have one location. Is that true?
Yes. Yeah, so we did have two locations up until last year. We opened our second location midway through 2018. And then it was in an area that was, very heavily hit by the pandemic. It was a office dense area. And over time, that just became too difficult for us. And so we decided to close that location in early 2024. And now just focused on the one.
Wow. Awesome. Yeah. And I did actually get the chance to come visit your store last year.
Oh, wonderful.
And yeah, I'll just say, first of all, so impressive what you're able to do with such a small space. We were just so impressed how the store itself is small, but nothing feels cramped. And you just feel it's more of a cozy feeling. You know, it's not like, whoa, there's boxes piled everywhere. I can barely fit in these aisles. It was just very impressive. And also what we noticed is, yeah, the location. It's because it's in like a strip mall, essentially, or I guess the right word, outlet mall, shopping center, in that kind of
shopping plaza, if you want to sound fancy.
Yep, which I feel like a lot of times businesses in that format, you're finding like chains and, like a Subway and things like that. But it was a lot of local businesses, which is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. The original landlord was very focused when we moved into that. So that's not our original location. We were just down the street, down Mass Ave, which is, again, a highly, highly trafficked area. But our original location was, there was not a lot of street parking. It was when we eventually decided to move, it was the era of, you know, shopping at big box stores more often, driving to get your full load of groceries. And so it became difficult for us to be in that location over time and see the foot traffic we needed. When we moved to this location, we were heavily recruited by the original landlord because they really understood the value of locally owned and independent businesses. And so they had recruited us, the bookstore, the cafe, the independently owned hardware store that's also in our plaza, the toy store that's in our plaza, the locally owned gym that's there. And so it really did become, you know, aesthetically, it looks like a shopping mall, you know, strip mall, shopping plaza. But when you go into it, you see all of these businesses are so unique and special. And that does make it really wonderful.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, like you said, so unique, so special, and just not something that you see all the time. So it's a nice little haven, especially in such an urban area, right? Okay, great. Thank you for sharing. And so, of course, we're going to talk about infra a little bit. So I would love to know when Cambridge Naturals joined infra and what kind of initially motivated you to want to become a member.
Yeah, so we've been familiar with infra, I think, since around its inception. You know, a little bit of the lore, which I've been told is that we were rejected twice as infra members, you know, again, because we're such a unique store and we were not like the more common full line grocery store that was a member of infra. We didn't quite fit the mold. However, you know, we do still sell quite a lot of grocery. You know, our grocery sales exceed the entire store sales of other infra members. And so we did have a very strong case for why we are, you know, a natural foods grocer. Again, even though we're a bit more unique. And so I think over time, it became clear that we were actually the right fit for infra. And when we joined, which I think was around 2012, 2013, we went full force into being, you know, very strong, active members of infra. My parents were active participants on the listserv, which is now the members only area for communication. But, you know, that was, we gained a lot of resources and knowledge through that. We attended every single conference. I, even before I moved back to the Boston area, was attending conferences with my parents and really gaining a lot from that experience. And we really dove in headfirst to everything that infra had to offer. We gained a lot from the early versions of share groups and having members come to our store and give us feedback on what we could be doing better, you know, which was always, I'm sure, a little bit hard to swallow, but all good advices. But it really did improve, you know, a lot of the ways we did things and our practices over time. So being a member of infra has been invaluable.
Yeah. Wow, I love that story. And just even though there was kind of this struggle at the beginning to get into infra, now Cambridge has just become such a pillar of the infra community, right? I'm personally always talking about the merch. I love your merch. I love the hats. I'm always bringing that up, but in so many other contexts. And I mean, you're also on the board. We'll get to that in a little bit. But yeah, so it's just such a cool story, and I'm glad that you persevered and were able to become part of this community.
Thank you.
So awesome.
Yeah, and shout out to our team. You know, we have an amazing team, specifically with regards to the merch. Sarah and Sally do such an incredible job of curating all of our gorgeous products that are, you know, highly covetable, and people, again, come from miles away to shop with us for those. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So awesome. And then, so as you already have, you know, explained, Cambridge Naturals is a family-owned business with your parents, Michael and Elizabeth, opening the store back in the 70s. So I'm just curious to know how your transition to ownership came about and why you decided to take up that mantle. And kind of a second part to that, what are some ways that you feel like you've held true to the original vision for the business while also shifting gears to the future and, you know, putting that spin on it?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I worked in the business as a youngster, as a teenager throughout high school into college. Always loved the store. It was always a big part of our family dynamic. You know, we always used to say, I have two older siblings. We always used to say the business was the fourth child in the family and got all the attention. And so, you know, it was a very important topic of dinner table conversation. My parents, you know, were always bringing the business home with them. And, you know, there were definitely downsides to that. But I also learned so much through, you know, osmosis, through hearing those conversations, through participating in those conversations, through asking questions, and always had a very strong affinity for what they did. But I wasn't necessarily interested myself in, you know, a long-term career with the store. I didn't, you know, see exactly how that would look, and was interested in many things in college, you know, as you are, pursuing different creative paths. But I ended up actually in 2012 going to a really unique business school. At the time, it was called Bainbridge Graduate Institute. It's now part of Presidio University, started by some really visionary founders who believed that business could be a catalyst for good in the world. And so, you know, I started that program, began, you know, reading lots, learning a lot in my classes about other business models, and pretty much every example that came up, you know, whether it was through a case study or through a book we were reading, I thought, oh, this ties back into what my parents have been doing, you know, for at that point, nearly 40 years. And so it was a important moment for me where I started, you know, putting together the pieces. It was always something I was really proud of that my parents had created. But in terms of like understanding their place in this bigger world, this bigger industry of natural foods, but also, you know, generally around businesses as catalysts for good in the world. So I was really inspired by that. And as my husband and I, we were living out in Oregon at the time. We started considering our next life moves. My parents also started saying, hey, you know, we're feeling like we're ready to, you know, move on. They wouldn't use the word retirement, but they would say, you know, move forward. And wouldn't it be wonderful for you guys to, you know, move back? And actually, my husband had gone to the same business school, so we both had a really strong interest in this area. And we thought, you know, what an incredible opportunity to take the skills that we have learned in our business school program and apply them in a real world context in, you know, an opportunity that not many people have to walk into an existing business and really use those skills pretty immediately. So we made a big decision to move back to Boston and move back in late 2014. We hit the ground running pretty immediately. My parents were still, you know, very involved in running the business. My mother managed all of the store's finances and HR and all of these various aspects of running it. And so I just tried to be as much of a sponge as possible, both for, you know, learning from what my parents were doing, but also learning from what other staff were doing, how they were handling things, all of our various systems. So yeah, it was like drinking from a fire hose at first. It was a ton of, you know, information to learn and a ton of mistakes to make and learn from my mistakes. And to my parents' credit, they gave me so much leeway to make my own mistakes and then learn from them. That was, you know, absolutely essential to my education of being a business owner. And, you know, when they did eventually transition out of the business, I felt so much more confident having made some of those mistakes already. Although, you know, the timing of their transition also came at the beginning of the pandemic. So that was interesting as well. And, you know, I would say, what did you do? How did you handle things in the last pandemic? And they couldn't answer that. So that was that was a challenge for sure. But in terms of the other part of your question around, you know, what I've done differently or how we've tried to put our own spin on it, you know, we've really tried to keep the mission and the vision and the values of the business intact, what my parents originally started with, but put some more organizational rigor behind it. Again, using some of these tools, techniques, leadership styles that we learned in our formal education, as well as our own work experiences and what we learned from that. You know, my parents worked in this business for, you know, decades, but it was essentially their only job out of college. And my husband and I had the benefit of having each of us essentially nearly a decade of work experience before we moved into the business. And so we could also take our own experiences of working for bosses and working within bigger organizations and learning some of the benefits and pitfalls to different styles of leadership. So we've brought a lot of that into, you know, the back end of the business. And then we've also really tried to expand the product selection, expand upon what we were already doing really well, which is having such a curated, unique product selection. And we think we've just kind of doubled down on that over time. And that seems to be bringing people in.
Yeah. And I think, and I mean, you've done such a great job.
Thank you.
To say that. But also, I think that's what makes, you know, second generation owners, like, that story so special and unique, because you have this, of course, familial tie and you have stake in the business emotionally, monetarily, of course, all the things. But it's different, right? Like, it's also your baby. It's your fourth sibling, like you said. So you have that part, which is so crucial for staying alive in, you know, the natural food space as an independent, but also you have this new drive and you are well versed on what's happening in the industry today, mm-hmm. right? And you know a different direction to take the business. And I think that's what makes just second generation owners so special. And you just have that balance of, I'm going to keep this thing alive and I have the energy to figure out the tools to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, there's something unique about not being a founder. You know, there's a lot of lore around the story of the founder. And I think founders are incredible, like, all credit where credit's due. But there's, you know, there's also something called founder syndrome. There's also, you know, the idea of being too in your business to be able to see it from the outside. And, you know, that's absolutely no shade to my parents. Like, again, I think they did an incredible job. And having come from a slightly outside perspective, you know, still with it being part of our upbringing and part of my understanding of the world for my entire life, it coming in with that outside perspective gave me, I think, a unique ability to look at it not just as like a part of me or, you know, like, or even my child, but actually like something on its own that I want to nurture and care for and have it grow, but not, you know, so attached to me or like my soul or my, you know, understanding of who I am. And so I think that's also been really invaluable for me, you know, is just like that slight detachment that I feel from it in comparison to, I think, the way my parents felt for many years.
Yeah, it's almost like you have the ability to give that tough love. Mm-hmm. We're founders. It's just not the same, right? Like, there's a vulnerability there, which is so understandable. But, you know, I think you put that so perfectly. That's so true. Okay, thank you for sharing that. And you knew it was coming, of course. You've been a member of the Infra Board of Directors for several years now. So I would love to know why you initially decided to run for the board and just some of the most rewarding aspects so far you've had in your experience.
Yeah. So I, you know, as we do on the Infra Board, we reach out and to members we know who we think might be interested in running for the board, members we have, you know, worked with in the past or connected with or know about. And so I was reached out to by a board member to suggest I consider running. And, you know, of course, it's a huge time commitment. And that's one thing we don't have in abundance as business owners is time. But I also had, you know, my father had been a board member, full disclosure. And so I learned from his experience, both the benefits and the drawbacks of being on the board, but generally just how his, you know, wonderful his experience was of building deeper connections with these board members, getting an insight, a deeper insight into the industry, into Infra's position with the industry. And, you know, ultimately there just seemed to be much more upside than downside in terms of time commitment and, you know, energy output. I care deeply about this industry, having grown up in it and now having run a business in it for, you know, 11 years and counting. And I felt like, again, what an incredible opportunity to have a seat at the table and to learn from the other board members, as well as our CEO, you know, about what Infra is doing in the industry, how Infra is positioning all of us to be more competitive, and also give our perspective as a somewhat unique store within Infra. I think that's still invaluable because we do represent a unique perspective and they may not hear from that perspective as frequently. And I think there have been times where bringing that perspective to the table has been really helpful to the direction of Infra. So I'm glad to offer that and also glad to learn from everyone else on the board.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we have such great diversity on the board and you bring so much to it. So thank you so much for being a part of it.
My pleasure.
We love having you. Okay. Amazing. And so next, I have a question that I feel like is very hard to answer, but it's my favorite to ask. What is something that you love most or that excites you about the natural foods industry as a whole?
That's a great question. I love the commitment to making the world a better place. And that sounds, you know, Pollyanna-ish. It sounds kind of, you know, like silly and maybe a throwaway line, but I really mean it. Like, so many people in this industry genuinely care about the entire supply chain, you know, from the farm workers to, you know, the harvest, generally the harvesters, to the packagers, the shippers, the distributors, the truck drivers, the people who sell the products within our stores, and then of course the end product itself, and then the consumer. Like, we really care about the life cycle of the products that we are working with. And, you know, that's of course not true of every person within the natural foods or products industry, but generally, you know, the care for organic, for regenerative agriculture, for better for you ingredients, for fair trade. These are all concepts originated in the natural foods industry. And now, of course, they're much more ubiquitous. They're available at conventional stores too, but it was started by people who really cared about what we're putting in our bodies, what we're putting in the soil, the health of people and planet. And so from that perspective, it is a really, you know, caring and deeply thoughtful industry overall. So that's one of the things I really love about natural foods. I love the uniqueness and the creativity of the natural foods industry. I think, you know, some of the product innovations and the the interesting ways of making healthy food taste good is another fun thing to explore. And the diversity of foods. You know, I think the natural foods world, you know, certainly there have been some pitfalls to some of the ways these things have been handled in the past. And, you know, there's been appropriation, cultural appropriation of foods. And at the same time, the natural foods world has been an outlet or an avenue for the food of many, many, many cultures to reach the palates of many people. And so from that perspective, I think it's been really wonderful at introducing a wide and diverse range of foods to a wide range of people.
Yeah. Wow. Such a good point. And, you know, and I think also kind of touching back on the compassion piece of natural foods industry cares for people, and therefore everything that they do for the most part is in service of that mission. And I think even today, that's more true than ever, because people and consumers are, you know, hungry to support businesses that align with their ethos and with their values.
Yep.
And we're just seeing that more and more with brands and big corporations. That is what is driving a lot of consumers right now. And is that something that you're kind of seeing in this space, or that you've heard from other retailers? I just feel like it's in the air.
Yeah, I think for sure. I mean, I think that trend is only growing. I think people are really waking up to where they put their dollars and how that matters. Of course, you know, as individual consumers, we really only can have so much of an impact, but collectively we can have an enormous impact. And so an individual action being part of a collective action, as far as, you know, where we're putting our money, really does matter. So I think people are making that choice with their wallet when they buy groceries, when they buy plastic-free items, when they choose low waste or zero waste generally, when they buy organic, when they buy regenerative. That money does talk. And the more, you know, resources are directed towards the better for you, better for the planet options, the more likely the industry moves generally in that direction. So it does matter. And I think more and more people are attuned to that.
Agreed, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one. Sorry, I'll get on my soapbox for one more minute. That's one other thing that I think is really important about independence, is that, you know, in terms of the impact on our communities, there's this whole concept of the local multiplier effect, and the money you spend at an independently owned business does impact your community at a greater level than money you would spend in a chain store or even online. And so in terms of just not only shopping natural foods, but shopping at an independently owned natural food store, you are having, your money is having a greater positive impact on your local community than if you take that money and spend it at a big corporation.
So good. And so true. Okay. Amazing. And you've already given, I mean, so many great tidbits, so many pieces of advice, but just to kind of wrap it up a little bit, what would you say is one of or a few of the most valuable lessons that you've learned in your time in business, especially from the perspective of a second generation owner? I would love to know.
Yeah, I have learned so much. And sometimes it's embarrassing to think back to my, 2014 self, even before that. But obviously, when I first started the business and, think about some of the assumptions I came in with or sort of, the things I thought I knew at the time. And so some of my most important lessons have just been the value of listening, the value of really deep listening before, jumping to a conclusion. We have a fairly collaborative management structure within our organization, and that has served us really well. As clunky and cumbersome as it is, sometimes we learn so much from our team and their perspectives, and that allows us to make stronger, better, more resilient decisions. So I've learned a lot from working in that environment. The lessons I've learned through making mistakes, I think, again, being granted the opportunity to make mistakes by my parents was so invaluable and has served me so well in being more resilient within our organization. And, this is, again, maybe going to sound kind of silly and throwaway, but like the importance of self-care. It's really real. It has, I have put a lot of energy into this business, and at times too much of my energy, and it has depleted me in ways that have taken me, a long time to recover from. And so recognizing that, especially in the pandemic, that was kind of a moment of a wake up call to say, hey, I really need to have some healthy detachment from my business, from the outcomes, from what I can and cannot control, and also focus on, putting on my own oxygen mask, making sure that I'm in a good and healthy place to be able to respond to what is needed. And lastly, I'll say having really amazing advisors on call, on speed dial if need be. But yeah, recognizing like I can't solve everything in a vacuum. My husband and I, can't solve everything in a vacuum. We need, we need to be able to rely on our team, and we need trusted advisors to be able to call and troubleshoot and talk through scenarios with. And that team of people that we have at our disposal has been invaluable. So, yeah.
I love what you said about mistakes. I feel like that's so true. Sometimes it's almost a privilege to be make mistakes, right? Because you can't always, not everyone can do that, right? Sometimes there is no room for error. So when you can make mistakes, it's almost like be grateful for that, because that is a lesson. You're not going to do that again. So almost like take advantage of that, right?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. And we do as much as possible try to pass that grace on to the rest of our team to, make mistakes, obviously, within a safe box, within a safe zone. But make some mistakes, learn from them, and then be able to say, okay, I won't make that same mistake again. So we do try to emphasize that within our culture as well.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us today, Emily. Is there anything else that you would like to shout out, touch on, speak your truth before we wrap this up?
I would just like to say thank you so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure. And yeah, we love Infra. We love everything it stands for. And we're so excited to be part of continuing the vision of Infra, building, the presence of Infra across 1,000 communities. It's really important.
Yes. And let's do it.
Thank you for tuning in to Common Roads. This episode has been made possible thanks to the hard work of Infra staff and Infra member contributors. To learn more about the retailers we serve, visit our retailer directory at naturalfoodretailers.com/retailer-foods. Directory.